All right. Today is our sanctity of human life, sanctity of life lesson. And we're going to take a little time and get out of Amos and for just today, and then we'll go back and get back into our study of Amos next week. We're going to look at verses in Genesis, Exodus, Psalm, and Mark. So we're going to cover the Old Testament and the New Testament. So let's take a minute and talk about why we, meaning us in this room, should and do value all human life. Tell me why. Why do we need to do that? Why do we need to value all human life? All being the key word.
Because God made us in the image of Him. We're the only ones that's made in the image of Him.
So, do we get the all part, though? Do we get the question? Why should we value all human life? Not just those... We can't be selective.
All. God created everyone.
Everybody. That's right. Everyone. Because we all bear the image and the identifying marks of God from our first moment in the womb, first moment in our mother's womb, until the final beat of our heart, we are valuable to God, the most important being in the universe. He created all of us before us. He created all of us that are with us. And He created those that are going to be... There's people being born right at this moment. Somewhere. So if we love Him, we love them. That's what we're going to talk about today. In our lesson last week, where we met Amos from the 8th century B.C., dealing with the same human sinfulness that we continue to deal with in the 21st century... Amos showed us that because he loved God, he did what God asked him to do, didn't he? That was the only reason he did it, because God told him to do it. And what he did was tell people of his time, the era of their ways toward God. And remember, he was pretty blunt and to the point. Amos could have had today's lesson easily in his little pocket as a sermon, because it would have been a great message for the people of Israel to, based on what we studied last week about caring about all people and not just those that are around you. I have it on. I'm sorry?
That thing that you had to put on.
Recorder.
Yeah.
You got it on?
Yes, ma'am. It's right here. Okay. All right. So, let's look at our first verses. The name of it is called Affirm Life's Values. Genesis 1, 26 through 27. I love Genesis 1 because it's all about what God said. You know, He didn't get out there and with some hammer and some nails and make everything. And He didn't roll any clay or any dough in His hands. He just said, He just said it and it happened. I love that. Then God said, "Let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, all the wild animals on the earth, and the small animals that scurry along the ground." So God created human beings in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created him. There's three key truths in these verses that we need to look at that are related to God's creation of human beings. God was personally involved in our creation. Let us make. Those words, let us make. Let us make human beings. They're going to make us. We weren't there. Isn't that kind of awesome to think about? That we weren't there. And He said, let us make human beings. Humans were made in God's image. He said, in our image. Scholars have different opinions about the us and the our in this verse. Some say that it's a plural version to denote majesty. And the plural pronoun, us and our, denotes, expresses God's supreme authority. And then some say that he may have been addressing his host of heavenly angels, his heavenly court of angels. But most agree that it's the expression of his authority over all, the Trinity. Whatever the exact meaning of the plural pronouns, the conclusion is the same. God brought us into existence by a special act of creation, and he gave us qualities that go along with his nature, his unique nature. So he gave us, he created us in his image. So that's the whole goal. He created us to in his image, and that's the image that should reflect back when people look at us. When people see us in action, that's what they should see. It's pretty simple. It goes back to the very beginning. We are set apart from all other created things. All the little things that, you know, when you read about that, the birds in the sky and the livestock and the little ones that scurry along the ground, that's the kind we don't like. The little scurriers, probably. Yes, little rats and things. God, the third thing, so first of all, God was personally involved. He made us in his image. And the third thing is that he intended for us as humans to dominate the earth and its life forms. And that's where it comes in, the fish, the birds, the livestock, all the earth, all the creatures that crawl on the earth. We are supposed to dominate. We are dominant, so we should be good caretakers of God's world. So are we?
Are we supposed to kill stuff?
Well, to eat. I mean, he intended for, you know, they did in the Old Testament, you know, to make sacrifices and to eat. So I don't think that that's a problem. But, you know, when you think about it, you think about healthy eating and so forth. And they used to live to be hundreds and hundreds of years old. Because he led them, but you know, you think about, I always think about Daniel. Remember when he was in prison and he wanted to eat vegetables and not all the rich foods and things, and he's to be healthy and strong, and they ended up, him and the three ended up being the strongest, and so there's something to be said for eating right and eating like the Bible tells you. So are we good caretakers of God's world?
Hopefully. I don't think so.
Not in the big scheme of things. I don't think so. Not always. Think about this. God created, he spoke into being the earth. So it's his, right? Everything's his from the beginning. First he had to make the earth because he had to have somewhere to put us. Right? So, then he creates us to live in his world and take care of it. So it's all his. But we forget about that. Because most of the time, our little world that we live in, who's it belong to? Me.
My house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Me, mine, and mine. My house, my car, my job. He could have my job if he wanted. I'd give that to him. He trusted us. He made us. He gave it to us. Through the centuries, we have continuously let him down. And the Israelites, man, they did a great job of that, didn't they? So, let's get back to remembering that it and we all belong to him. That's what we have to do. We are all uniquely valuable and worthy of respect. Whether we're male or female, and I'm not talking about y'all in this room, I'm talking about everybody you encounter, because, and I'll probably say it again in my lesson because I remember writing it down, you know, we're very selective about who we respect or who we think is worthy of our respect. You know, it's our little world that we live in. That's who we respect. That's who we love. That's who we care about. So whether we're male or female, young or old, wealthy or poor, gifted or lacking, we're all worthy of just plain old common general respect because you were created in God's image, just like the next person, just like the next person. So, you know, we get disrespected too. We do. But we disrespect too. When we view life as God saw it, when He gave it to us, so He sees it. He sees, let us make human beings. So we're there. We're back there. And He's created us. If we see it like He saw it, we should have no other choice but to treat everyone as God's own special, precious gift. How easy is it? I mean, it's quick. We could have done it this morning, to shun somebody because they're different. But God made them. He made them that way for a reason. Next time you look at someone with disgust because there's something not quite right about them, remember God made them just like He made you. Just stop and think a minute. God made them like that. That's how we can affirm life's value. Everybody's life. That's how we can do it. I'm just as guilty. I'm first in line. Y'all be pushing me aside to get there, but I'm first. So let's look at respect and protect life. And that's in Exodus chapter 1.
But you know, each generation, in my opinion, looks like they get worse and worse. I mean, the last generation, my generation, the generation before that, had more respect, and it's getting down and down and down.
So where did it start falling down?
Well, I don't know. Well,
we should
come back up.
You know, that's the thing. Somewhere along the line, you know, that's like the Israelites and all those years of their journey. You know, the ones that got punished are not the ones that He originally gave it to. You know, they're generations away. So what happened there? You know, it fell. It just keeps getting lighter and lighter and lighter. You know, it's just, I mean, like Jeff, my son, he's different than what John and I were, you know, for that. I mean, is that us, or is it the world? You know, yes, it's our responsibility to make sure that he, even it.
Is it the lack of people not knowing the Lord?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. Not being brought to church, not being. I mean, when I went to church, this is the way it was. Mm-hmm. And Mama, I'll say it in front of her. If I didn't go to church, I didn't have a life. You know, I went Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. I mean, I was involved in all kinds of activities. And if you did,
I had a date on Sunday night, he went to church with me.
Yeah. And so you just went. And then you got to do other things. So it was just the way it was. I was thinking about the other day, I don't know who I was talking to. I don't know if it was somebody here, but it was after about revivals. I don't know if we talked about that last week or not, but I remember when we were growing up at Eastern Hills, I mean, revivals would be a whole solid week.
Yeah.
You know, a whole solid week of some preacher.
Packed every night.
Every night. Packed. Like this guy was going to bring us something that nobody else ever had, you know, but there was always special singers. I remember that as a little girl. And now we don't have them, or they're like 2 days, or they have them and they're for the people that are not working, you know. So it's
I think things started going bad in the 60s when they went to Woodstock.
Free Love and all
free
that.
Free Love came out, and the petitions came out, and nobody said anything about it. Then the baby boomers come along. And they quit going to church, and the mamas and daddies quit making them go to church.
Well, and then school, you know, you can't spank your kids without getting in trouble anymore, you know. So it's I tell you what, kids that are probably 12 to 14-ish, 15-ish, a bunch of them together, that's scary.
It is.
Because you just don't, they're the meanest, I think.
And little girls is just as mean as little girls.
Yeah,
right now.
Mm-hmm, it is. All right. So, let's look at Exodus chapter 1, verses 15 through 17. Then Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, gave this order to the Hebrew midwives, Shiprah and Puah. When you help the Hebrew women as they give birth, watch as they deliver. If the baby is a boy, kill him. If it is a girl, let her live. But because the midwives feared God, they refused to obey the king's orders. They allowed the boys to live too. So fear, distortion, and a sinful worldview control the mind of the king of Egypt. God was nowhere in there if he's wanting to kill little boys because he's afraid. Our verses in Exodus are during one of the most difficult periods in Israelite history, the final century of the people's time in Egypt. During the time of Joseph, remember, they were welcomed in Egypt, and it was plentiful, and everybody was happy. But after Joseph's death, everybody forgot about everything. You know, that seems to be here, you know, when somebody passes on, everything they taught or knew goes with them. And so a new regime has taken power over Egypt. The new ruler forced them to do slave labor, brutal, brutal labor, and to try to keep them down, keep them oppressed. And the more he made them work, the more they prayed to God, and the more they still kept producing. He thought he was going to wear them down, but they still kept multiplying. He didn't want them to grow, but it didn't help. So he wanted the males for free slave labor, but he didn't want them to continue to multiply and be able to take over. So he instructed them to kill the male. So it's kind of an oxymoron. He wanted them for the work, but he wanted to kill them to keep them from taking over. So he didn't know what he wanted. So the women paved the way. Well, let me back up. He instructed the midwives to kill the babies. But you know what? What stopped them from doing that?
God.
What stopped them, though? The fear of God. Their respect of God. Because they respected and feared God. And they believed in him. And so that's what, more than any earthly ruler, they understood that now whatever the earthly ruler did, he could make it worse. So they paved the way for the protection of Moses. And who was Moses? He led the Israelites to freedom. And who used him? God did. So, let's talk about that a minute. You know, we're going to look, our next verses are going to talk about before we were born, everything was written out in Psalm. That's what those verses are about. So let's talk about Moses for a minute and just talk about how awesome God is, y'all, that he knew the plan of Moses before he even existed. It was written in the book. And all these things had to happen. They had to be brutalized. They had to be, the midwives had to not kill the boys. And so that paved the way for them to hide Moses because, you know, and for the Pharaoh's daughter to find the whole thing. It's a plan, you know. And you get to see after the fact, well, a little bit before, because we know the story, we get to go back here and see one of God's plans in action. All this had to happen so that Moses could get in that basket and go down that river. This specific thing had to happen for that to happen. That's the way I look at it. I don't know if y'all agree or not, but I think it's because we know what happened after the fact, we know how Moses came about, then his own mother gets to take care of him. I mean, how, you know, that's got to be a God thing that happened. So let's look back at verse 20. What happened to the midwives because they did this? It wasn't in our verses, but let's look at this. So God was good to the midwives, and the Israelites continued to multiply, growing more and more powerful. God was good. They got blessings for obedience. And then it says, in 21. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. So blessings for obedience. Blessings for something they never even imagined was going to be able to happen for them. Happened because they feared God. So let's look at our next verses in Psalm 139. It's a great, great psalm. Celebrate life's purpose. And it's verses 13 through 16. And I think that's what Derek's preaching on today. Let's see. 13 through 16, Psalm 139. You made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous, how well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. I love this verse. You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. Now that is God right there. Isn't that cool? Our lives have been laid out every single moment, every moment laid out in the book before it ever even happened. So this is not a history lesson. Read these verses not like you are reading what David said, but that you're saying these words to God. I mean, that's the way you need to. Don't read it like, oh, this is something David wrote. This is you reading it to God. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. The complexities of our bodies. Do you think about this? I know it's been a long time since any of us was in a science or a biology class, so I looked it up on the internet. I didn't have Mama's encyclopedias. I'm old-fashioned. I would have preferred just to go to the encyclopedia. So we are born with 300 to 350 bones in our bodies, and as adults we have 206 because they fuse together as we grow. There are 60,000 miles of blood vessels in the human body, enough to wrap around the world 2.5 times.
How many?
60,000 miles.
Ooh.
Isn't that something?
How they get them in there?
I don't know. Why don't you ask him? It takes seven. I love this. I love this one. It takes 17 muscles to smile and 43 to frown. I love that. So it's just easier to smile. We use 200 muscles to take one step. How about that? Approximately 9,000 taste buds are on our tongue. That's why we either like it or hate it. Whatever it is. Humans blink over 10 million times a year. These are fun facts about the body. There are more than 640 muscles in our bodies, and a human heart beats 100,000 times a day. Isn't that something? Some faster than others. Just think about the complexities of what he created and how we're all so different. You know, you'd think he'd got bored after a while.
The human body is a mystery to me anyway. Mm-hmm.
Birth is a mystery. Where a baby forms in a woman that day.
Right. That's why he's so awesome. I mean, that's why you have to just kind of take a step back and think about how awesome he is and who we worship and why we do and why we pray to him, because he does make things happen.
And double and triple and beyond that, birth is to me is just... it's beyond my thinking how a woman can carry more than one child, even one, but more than one child.
Yeah, I know.
Stuffets and all that is just beyond my way of thinking.
It's probably beyond theirs while they're doing it.
I'm sure.
So David realizes that that's very important today, all human beings are remarkably made. We are infinitely more complex and detailed than any human could construct or come about by evolution. There's no way that some evolutionary chance could make us happen. And no human being could do it. Remember Frankenstein? I thought about that. You know, when he tried to put all these different pieces together and make, and it didn't work out, did it?
So you don't think you're from a monkey?
I don't know. Go ask Mama. I think I weighed like 8 pounds and something. I don't know. I was pretty big. The Lord saw us before we were formed every day. I just love this. I'm going to say it again. Every day of our lives were written in the book and planned before a single one had begun. So you can make all kind of plans, but guess what? It's already been written down what you're going to do today, whether you may have a plan for something else.
That's in Proverbs.
It's something, isn't it? How awesome is our Creator? Every moment is counted as precious enough for God to record it in a permanent record. Every moment. You know, not just these big chunks of time, but every moment. So how do you use your moments? How do I use my moments? I know I don't use them like I should.
Waste a lot.
If God did all this for us, every life has a purpose. Doesn't that make sense? It's just very simple. Everybody's life has a purpose because we were all made by Him. Not just our moments or the moments of those we love, here it is, but every moment of everyone's lives we should celebrate. We should celebrate that He saw fit to create them. God made them and they have a purpose. The midwives in Exodus were precious. They had a purpose and God used them and they did it to His glory because they feared Him. And that moment for them was written in God's permanent record from before the time they were created. So be ready for God to show you your purpose. Always be ready, you know, and your purpose can change. You just don't, you know, sometimes I think, what is my, I think, do y'all ever still think about that, even as at your age, at your mature ages?
Yeah.
Think about what God wants you to do? Are you doing what you think you're supposed to be doing, that kind of thing? So let's look and look in Mark. Mark 10, verses 13 through 16. And we're going to talk about following Jesus' example. Skip over to 13 through 16. One day some parents brought their children to Jesus so He could touch and bless them. But the disciples scolded the parents for bothering Him. When Jesus saw what was happening, He was angry with His disciples. He said to them, "Let the children come to me. Don't stop them, for the kingdom of God belongs to those who are like these children. I tell you the truth, anyone who doesn't receive the kingdom of God like a child will never enter it." Then He took the children in His arms and placed His hands on their heads and blessed them. And I always think about the Sunday school pictures. I love those old-timey Sunday school pictures, you know, the big ones that we used to get. And you see them in flea markets sometimes, and those people think those things are gold. And, you know, they're just so cool. But I see Him sitting on the rock, and He's got all the little kids around Him, you know. I always think about that image when I read that. So these disciples were trying to manage Jesus' time. So they were just trying to help Him out. And they had good intentions, but they did it and it made Him mad because He scolded the parents for bringing children to see Him. So what were they thinking? Jesus was busy and He didn't have time for kids. So how often do we think, you know, you're busy and they're just kids, they'll get over it.
And the children are today are the adults of tomorrow.
That's right. That's scary, isn't it? That's scary. I'm sure they thought that when... Well, I know, but I'm thinking about like when I was young and the kids and they're going, oh my gosh, you know, she's going to be the adult of tomorrow.
The kids, the children at Jesus' knee were the ones who perpetrated His beliefs later on.
Mm-hmm.
Or, that's not the right word. But
it's just like what we were saying earlier about how things fell by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of things like that, getting on, you know, scolding the parents and thinking that they shouldn't bring the kids. So, but we got to teach them. We got to teach them. I take every opportunity to talk to Benji, our little soon-to-be official grandson, you know, about Jesus. And he's been to church. Or he's been here, you know, but he's been with his great-grandmother. And he knows a little bit, you know, but I take every opportunity I can, and I buy him books, children's books about things like that, so he can try to, because I want him to, but I don't get to see him enough to influence him as much as I'd like to, but I'm going to work on that. So, Jesus wanted to see the kids. It didn't matter to him. He created them. He wanted to see them. And he told the disciples to let them come. And what did it say? He was angry with his disciples. I don't know what, that's what my version says. Miss Ann, what does your version say? In 14, when Jesus saw what was happening, he was angry. I think it says something about
he said displeased. He was much displeased.
Yeah.
Mine says he was indignant.
Indignant.
Mine says displeased.
Yep. So, he was always using a moment to teach. With this one, he wanted to show the disciples that God had time for and valued all people, especially those that were most vulnerable and the least socially powerful members of the human race. So, he wanted to show that even though they were kids, they were still important. Anyone that has a right relationship with God should have the attributes of a child. What does that mean? Anybody that has a right relationship with God should have the attributes of a child.
Innocent.
Simple. Humble. A child has nothing to give Jesus in exchange for his blessings. So who do we need? We all need Jesus. We need him probably more than the kids need them after you get up and get an adult and think you know so much. But just remember, anybody that's got a right relationship with God, you're humble, you're simple, you want to know more, you want to learn, you're hungry for it. Think of the song, you know, this is the song that I came forward on when I was 11 years old, just as I am. I'll never forget that as long as I live. That's how they came, just as they were, those kids. And that's how we should come. Just as we are. Don't come to Jesus thinking that you've got a resume filled with successes to be eligible to receive his blessing. Because remember, what won't get you into heaven? Works. Come as you are. That's another song that we sing, one of the more modern songs, Come As You Are. Just as you are. Jesus didn't draw away from these children, he embraced them. He emphasizes the childlike faith we should have as we come to him and the way we should treat others. Take Jesus' lead in these verses. Show care and concern for all children, including those that are yet to be born. Because there we'll still encounter some that hadn't made it here yet in our lifetime. Does anybody have anything else they want to add? Now, that wasn't about being pregnant, was it, Betty? Okay, next week we go back to Amos, and we'll be covering chapters 5 and chapter 6, verses out of those chapters for Amos. I'm really enjoying Amos. I hope y'all are. So,
you know, I think one of the main things...